Hello and welcome back to Reality Check. I got some really great feedback all last week from my episode on bullying. I was especially happy to hear from parents who have experienced their own children being bullied. Given the current politicized nature of the whole topic, I was a little worried that what I had to say would hit a nerve. People are very quick to make giant leaps in logic, like, you didn't call bullies the greatest threat the world has ever known. That means you must support bullying. I kind of assumed that my listeners wouldn't have that ridiculous of a reaction, but still, while recording it did make me hesitate slightly. I was glad to hear from parents specifically, because I think it's a very different thing to look at the subject from the perspective of, I was bullied as a teen, versus my teen was bullied. We can often grin and bear it when it's our, you know, ourselves on the line. When it comes to our children, though, we instinctively rush to defend them from any and all threats, even the relatively minor ones. That's why you see so many parents doing so many things for their kids, like fighting their battles for them. I've even heard of parents accompanying their children, their adult children, on job interviews. That's how scared some parents have become of adversity facing their offspring. But no, the parents that contacted me about my episode seemed to understand and agree with everything I was saying. The consensus was basically, it's hard to watch your child suffer emotionally, but ultimately, watching them conquer those obstacles on their own, with parental guidance and moral support, obviously, that watching that made them more gratified and proud of their kid than anything else would have. And also relieved, this sense of, it's going to be all right. We raised our kid well, and they're going to be a really strong and confident adult soon. So again, thanks for listening, and especially thank you for the feedback. I love hearing back from anyone listening, and I make sure to respond personally to everyone who writes me, so please do if you feel like chatting. This week, I'm finally going to get to the topic of death, or more specifically, dealing with the death of a loved one. I'm going to say right off the bat, I'm pretty fortunate that I've only really had to deal with my mother and father's death. I've never had to deal with a peer or a child dying. Perhaps my views might change slightly when those things happen to me, but I'm thinking in general terms, there are some principles or things to keep in mind that may help someone through the trauma, and I'm guessing that those principles won't change just the intensity of the loss felt, and thus, the degree to which those principles are tested. First things first, though, there is no easy way to get through the death of a loved one. There just isn't. It's always going to suck, and the most you can ever really hope for is that it doesn't last too long. I think most people are aware of the five stages of grief, but in case you aren't, I'll list them out real quick. First comes shock and or denial. That basically means that you either physically or mentally try to detach or retreat from reality in order to try to delay the pain. Next comes anger, where you've let the pain in, but you're trying to shove it away as forcefully as you can. After that is bargaining, where you try to exert control over it, ranging from pleading for a miracle to concocting a plan to sue the doctor for malpractice. Then it's depression, where you gather the pain and the loss around you like bathwater and just soak in it. And then lastly comes acceptance, where you begin your life again and start thinking of the person as a memory rather than a present entity in your life. Now, it's important to note that this isn't a hard and fast truism for everyone. Some people don't go through all the stages, and some people stay stuck in those stages for extremely long periods of time, such that they can barely be called stages at all. These stages are merely a general framework for understanding the process. Obviously, when you look at it rationally, everyone would want to get to the acceptance stage as quickly as possible. And that's where I settle on it as well. No one should feel shame if they get stuck feeling depressed or angry. But since death is something that we have absolutely no power to change, the only consideration is to make sure that the living get back to a fulfilling life as quickly as possible. Now, I'm going to put forward a concept that might be hard to grasp at first, but it's the way I think about it, and I think it's helped me to put things into context. I've talked about this in previous episodes, about this idea of like previous versions of you, like in my Laws of Attraction episode, where I talk about the you of years ago that became friends with somebody, and now the you of today doesn't have the same relationship with that other person. It's a similar idea here, and I'll use my own personal experience as an example. Just as a bit of background, I had a rocky relationship with my dad. It's not that we didn't like each other or that there was some big falling out or anything. My teen years were ravaged by an abusive and alcoholic mother, so I didn't actually really grieve all that much when she died when I was 16. But my dad was never really present. He was a doctor, and so he was working all the time. And I suspect he worked extra hard just to stay away from my mom, really. But after she died, there was just wreckage. So in my 20s, I disconnected from my family as a whole to reestablish my own identity away from all the teenage angst. My dad and I kept in touch, but it was infrequent. Finally, around when I turned 30, I started visiting him again, getting to know him more as a friend than a father. And with those fresh eyes, I realized how great of a man he was. Maybe not the best father, but a great man. So, back to that concept I mentioned. All throughout my life, even when I was barely communicating with him, I was always Brian who has a father. I was also Brian who has a girlfriend, Brian who has this or that other friend. But part of who I was I'm a guy who has a father who lives over there, and I can visit him if I want, or I can fall back on him if I get into serious trouble, or, you know, whatever else. I was that Brian. After his death, I suddenly became Brian who has no living parents. Now, that's an objective fact. I mean, the moment he died, I became parentless. But that's not really the rub. The rub is that I now had a task laid before me. I have to take my mind on a journey from Brian who has a dad over to Brian who has no parents. I have to get my emotions and my reason from point A to point B, and I got to do it quickly because every hour I'm on that road, it's going to be bumpy. Now, some people would stop me here and say, whoa, hold on there. That sounds really unhealthy. All you're doing is refusing to grieve. You're just bottling up all your emotions. Well, I see where they're coming from, and yes, you know, people do sometimes try to cheat their way through grief by denying their own emotions, but that's not really what I'm saying. Yes, you want to get from that point A to point B as quickly as you can, but that means fully getting there. That means you aren't in denial. You actually have felt everything you needed to. It's funny because lots of people keep assuring me, you know, it's going to hit you when you least expect it and you're going to just start crying. And I have to keep telling them, you know, no, I'm good. And I am. Now, how do I know that? All right, so here's how it went for me. I got the call that my dad had died one Saturday morning. My first words were, holy shit, are you serious? That was my shock. Now, I'm not someone who can stay shocked for very long, so I immediately went into problem-solving mode. What does this mean for me? Will I need to figure out how to arrange funeral stuff? I guess I finally need to find my own doctor, like, that's not my dad. What about the website we were working on together? Does progress on that just stop? All of these thoughts were racing through my head as I showered and dressed to go over to his house to be with his wife and my sister. I guess you could call that my version of bargaining. I was trying to immediately see what I could grasp onto to control. I skipped over anger entirely, which makes sense because anger isn't really an emotion I feel very often. That day, there was crying all around, myself included. Not bawling, but I had tears in my eyes just sitting there for most of the day, as we talked about, you know, fond memories of him. Then I went home and to sleep. The next day is when the work began. I had to get myself from that point A to point B. What was Brian who had a dad like? What did that guy look like? And who will Brian who has no parents look like? What are the differences between those two people? And for the next few days, in the lead up to the funeral, I sat with those two Brians, comparing and contrasting. Brian A. thought of this house as the one he grew up in and the one my dad sort of built, you know? Brian B. now thinks of this as Karen's house, Karen's his wife. Brian A. would go to visit his dad every Friday or Sunday, talk about the latest progress on the website, or play around with a new touchscreen laptop that he had bought. Brian B. now had to find some new use for his weekends. Even self-serving things that most people probably don't want to admit. Like Brian A. knew in the back of his head that his dad would help him out with money if he needed it. Brian B. now has to sink or swim. In traveling this road from A to B, what I was doing was remembering, preparing, redefining, adapting. Brian A. had a colorful history and a relationship with his older man who used to be a father figure but now is more of a buddy. Brian B. is someone who chooses to emphasize that at the end, he and his dad were on the best of terms they had ever been on. I attended the funeral exactly one week later. Many people were having rougher times than I, and that makes sense. He meant different things to different people. But in my mind, I was pretty much already Brian B. This was my new life. It had been reshaped over the period of a week, and I decided that it was important to draw from the positivity of his memory as much as I could and apply it to this new identity. Well, after all that, I'm hoping that explaining that transition idea is helpful for some people. Again, I'm not saying that anyone should feel like they need to rush through it, but life is way too short, which hopefully the death reminded you of. The faster we can start living our lives again, the better off we are. And really, that loved one who died would want you to get back to it, and not waste a single moment more grieving than is necessary. I must say, even before finishing, this already feels like one of my least effective episodes. I'm just going to say it. But in a way, I guess that's fitting. There is no easy fix here. There's only the question of what now? And the answer is unknown and probably kind of unsatisfying at the same time. Even after accepting the death, you never really feel good about it. So, yeah, I guess it's fitting that this episode feels sort of open-ended. Just gotta move on. And move on we shall. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you all again next week.